The history of theatre in Ireland is very much wrapped up with the history of theatre in England. Theatre, as we know it today, didn't exist in Gaelic Ireland, although there was a vibrantly physical tradition of jugglers, acrobats, tricksters, farters and harpers in the Gaelic courts. Theatre is an imported art form, albeit one we have made our own in the interim. As such, the colonial and post-colonial relationship between Ireland and England has always had a profound impact on players and playhouses. London looms large in the Irish theatrical imagination. The first theatre in Dublin was established in Werburgh Street in 1637, near where Burdock's Chipper is today. It was set up by a Scotsman called John Ogilby, whose official title was Master of the Revels. Apart from plays, the theatre at Werburgh Street entertained Dubliners with cudgelling, cockfighting and bear baiting, all the good stuff, but was closed down by no-crack Puritans in 1641. With the restoration of the monarchy, Ogilby managed to re-establish the theatre at Smock Alley in 1662. The entire edifice was lit with tallow candles, which gave off an unholy stink and quite a lot of smoke. Two soldiers with bayonets act as a security for those nights where the audience were liable to get excited. The theatre was built on land reclaimed from the River Liffey behind us, and the whole thing collapsed in 1670 and again in 1701. Many audience members lost their lives on both occasions. The Lord Lieutenant of the time broke both his legs and had to be dragged to safety. A word of warning, there will be many more fires, disturbances and collapses in the course of this tour. The theatre underwent rapid refurbishment in 1735 and entered something like a golden age. Over the next 50 years, Smock Alley cultivated a close working relationship with Drury Lane and Covent Garden, the leading playhouses of London, and hosted the likes of David Garrick and Charles Macklin, two of the greatest actors of their time. Macklin was born Cathal McLaughlin in the Inishowen Peninsula in Donegal. His breakthrough role was Shylock in The Merchant of Venice. The King of England was so impressed with Macklin's Shylock that he was unable to sleep afterwards. Alexander Pope said of it, "This is the Jew that Shakespeare drew." Macklin was convicted of manslaughter for stabbing a fellow actor in the eye during a backstage row over a wig. Theatre historian Christopher Fitzsimon describes him as being universally disliked. He was possessed of an uncontrollable temper and many of his engagements resulted in litigation. It all makes sense when we find out that Macklin worked for a time as a security guard in Trinity College. Another figure associated with Smock Alley is Oliver Goldsmith. He's best remembered for a poem called The Deserted Village and a play called She Stoops to Conquer. Others maintain that he also penned two well-known children's rhymes. Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown and Jill came tumbling after. Hickory dickory dock, the mouse ran up the clock struck one, the mouse ran down, hickory dickory dock. On the strength of this alone, some might say that Goldsmith was the best thing to come out of Longford since the train to Dublin. He's commemorated in stone to the right of Front Arch at Trinity College. Speaking of Front Arch, perhaps the greatest actor associated with Smock Alley started out selling oranges and watercress to students at that very location. This person was a 7-year-old child called Peg Woffington. Oranges were the snack of choice in 18th and 19th century Dublin theatre. You could chow down on juicy segments and then throw orange peel at the villain of the piece, all the while keeping scurvy at bay. Watercress was also popular, so we can view Peg as something like the precursor to Sprout on Dawson Street. Peg plied her wares outside Trinity, but also outside the various theatres of the city, cultivating friendships in the process. She was known for her wit, even at such a young age. Peg's father died when she was very young. Her mother was a washerwoman, and the child was roped into all sorts to make ends meet. One evening as she was carrying a jug of water to her mother's washhouse, Peg was caught in a massive rainstorm and had to take shelter in a doorway along the quays here. We don't know where exactly, but for the purposes of this tour, you may picture the doorway immediately to the left of Smock Alley. A local performer called Madame Violante spied the girl, shivering in wet rags, and thought her very graceful. Madame Violante was an Italian tightrope walker who performed in Temple Bar with live babies strapped to her feet. As you do. The following exchange is supposed to have taken place. "You are cold, my child."
"Yes, ma'am."
"And what is your name, my little child?"
"My name is Peg, ma'am. Peg Woffington."
I am Madame Violante. You perhaps have heard my name. You are Madame Lante that dances on the rope in the lovely booth in Faunus Court. The same. Would you like to dance also on the rope? Oh, ma'am, I would be delighted. Very well. I will teach you if you learn quickly and well, but first we must ask your mother and hear what she has to say. This chance encounter was the beginning of Peg's successful stage career. Madame Violante went on to produce and direct an all-children version of The Beggar's Opera, with Peg as Polly Peachum. This proved wildly popular with Dublin audiences. So much so that Smock Alley lobbied the Lord Mayor to have Madame Violante banned from any and all theatrical endeavours in the city. The Fagin of Dublin theatre was forced to move on to Edinburgh, where she eventually died in 1741. Peg's big breakthrough came aged 19, when she took on the role of Ophelia at the Anger Street Theatre at 48 hours' notice. Then came the role for which she is best remembered, a role she reprised many times during her career, the breeches part of Sir Harry Wildair in The Constant Couple by George Farquhar. Like many Irish actors before and since, she moved to London and enjoyed tremendous success at Covent Garden and Drury Lane. She was briefly engaged to a member of the Irish nobility, a waster called Nicholas Taff. They set up home together in London, but Taff never put a ring on it and went missing for long unexplained periods. Peg eventually discovered that he was having an affair with a wealthy woman called Miss Dalloway. She arranged to meet Miss Dalloway in Vauxhall Gardens, dressed as a man, and used her own love letters from Taff to prove his faithlessness. What a woman. Ingenious revenge. Peg later embarked on a tempestuous four-year relationship with another leading actor of the 18th century stage, David Garrick. Garrick was meant to become a wine merchant, like his father, but ended up treading the boards instead. Their relationship was fairly torrid and could be seen as a precursor to the likes of Olivier and Lee or Burton and Taylor. Visitors to their Bow Street home noted a profound difference in hospitality, depending on whether it was Peg or David that had issued the invitation. She was famously flahoolach, whereas he was notoriously stingy. She played Ophelia to his Hamlet in Smock Alley in 1742. They never married and eventually parted ways 2 years later. 1751 marked Peg's triumphant return to Dublin. She took up lodgings over the river at Capel Street and played various roles alongside Thomas Sheridan, the great actor-manager of Smock Alley and father of Richard Brinsley Sheridan. Her salary of £400 jumped to £800 the following year. She converted to Protestantism in order to inherit a vast fortune. And then she converted back to Catholicism once the cash was safely in the bank. In 1757, Peg sadly suffered a massive stroke during the fourth act of As You Like It and retired from acting forever. She spent her final days in a town called Teddington on the banks of the River Thames. Her final lover was a man called Colonel Julius Caesar. She was buried in a vault under Teddington Church at the ripe old age of 39. Smock Alley closed its doors in 1787, partly due to competition from Spranger Barry's new theatre venture on Crow Street in Temple Bar. The theatre became a whiskey store and fell into a state of disrepair. From 1815 to 1989, it served the spiritual needs of Dubliners as the Church of St Michael and St John. In the 1990s, it was a Viking museum. In the 2000s, it was mostly derelict. And then, finally, in 2012, it reopened as a theatre once more. Today's Smock Alley is a vital part of the Dublin theatre ecosystem. It enjoys a very close relationship with the Gaiety School of Acting, which is located to the rear on Essex Street. One of its greatest innovations in recent times is the Seen and Heard Festival, which gives budding theatre makers the opportunity to present half-hour double bills of new work every February and March. In 2012, I had the privilege of performing here in a live game show called Pop. Five actors in different coloured underpants had to perform a series of mildly humiliating challenges. And at the very end, the audience voted one of us off by holding up a coloured card corresponding to the underpants of their least favourite participant. Love Island meets Ready Steady Cook. The great English actor Anthony Quayle once said that the ideal theatre was halfway between a church and a brothel. Smock Alley is pitch perfect in this respect. Our next stop will be the Olympia Theatre. For those of you who are walking the route, I'd ask that you turn around and go back the way you've just come. Up Exchange Street, past Isolde's Tower, left at Lundy Foots. Take a right at the Turk's Head and Zaytoun Kebab House, go up Parliament Street and then left onto Dame Street by City Hall. It is worth noting as we pass that the very first rebel casualty during the Easter Rising of 1916 was an Abbey actor called Sean Connolly, not to be confused with James Connolly. Connolly was part of the Irish Citizen Army contingent that attempted to storm Dublin Castle on Easter Monday. They were repelled by castle guards and ended up taking City Hall instead. Connolly was shot by a British sniper on the roof of City Hall. Lady Augusta Gregory, co-founder of Ireland's National Theatre, penned these lines after Connolly's death. O branch that withered without age, would we could see you where you're missed. Step airy on the Abbey stage, play there the revolutionist. Or fill with laughter pit and stalls, with Bartley Fallon's croak and cry. What led you to those castle walls? We mourn you, Sean Connolly. I would suggest that you cross Dame Street so that you can appreciate the Olympia from the far side. The little green postbox is as good a spot as any. The insignia, E or VII, on the front of the postbox tells us that it was installed during the reign of Edward VII, King of England and Ireland from 1901 to 1910. If you look closely, you can see the red paint of pre-independence Ireland coming through the green. An example, perhaps, of Freud's theory of the return of the repressed.